March is Women's History Month, and in this podcast, we will recognize and give voice to some of the women who have been vital in documenting, preserving, and celebrating Florida's diverse heritage. Looking all the way back to the 1930s, we begin with Eatonville native Zora Neale Hurston, who documented turpentine workers in Cross City, Florida, as part of the Works Progress Administration's Federal Writers Project. Through her essay Turpentine and Field Recordings, Hurston captured unique first-hand accounts of day-to-day life in the turpentine camps and the traditions that were an integral part of the workers' culture. Halima Fack and Tilly, Lend Me Your Pigeon were two of the many songs Hurston learned in the course of her fieldwork for the WPA, which she demonstrates to her colleagues Herbert Helpert, Stetson Kennedy, and Dr. Carita Doggett Course on the following recordings from 1939.
I heard Halima Fack down on the East Coast. I don't remember. I was in a big crowd, and I learned it in the evening during the crowd, and I'm just can't exactly remember who did teach it to me, but I learned it from the crowd, most exactly, more from one. You may leave and go to Halima Fack, but my slow drag will bring you back. Well, you may go, but this will bring you back. I've been in the country, but I moved to town. I'm a tolo shaker from a head on down. Well, you may go, but this will bring you back. Ah, some folks call me a tolo shaker. It's a doggone lie. I'm a backbone breaker. Well, you may go, but this will bring you back. Oh, you like my features, but you don't like me. Don't you like my features? Don't you shake my tree? Oh, well, you may go, but this will bring you back. A hoodoo, a hoodoo, a hoodoo wagging. My heels are popping and my toenails cracking. Well, you may go, but this will bring you back.
You said you learned it in a crowd. How do you learn most of your songs?
I learn them. I just get in the crowd with the people, and if they sing it, and I listen as best I can, then I start to join in with a phrase or two, and then finally I get so I can sing a verse, and then I keep on till I learn all the songs and all the verses, and then I sing them back to the people until they tell me that I can sing them just like them, and then I take part and I try it out on different people who already know the song until they are quite satisfied that I know it, and then I carry it in my memory.
Well, how about those that you have in your books and published in the journal?
Well, that's the same way I got them. I learned the song myself, and then I can take it with me wherever I go. This little song is a story. The young lady thinks that it's time for them to get married. In fact, she thinks they just have to, and the boy doesn't want to marry. And so this song is about it. Tilly, lend me your pigeon to keep company with mine. Tilly, lend me your pigeon to keep company with mine. My pigeon gone wild in the bush, my pigeon gone wild. My pigeon gone wild in the bush, my pigeon gone wild. Evelina, Evelina, you know the baby don't favor me. Hey, hey, you know the baby don't favor me. Evelina, Evelina, don't you tell your mama it belong to me. Hey, hey, you know the baby don't favor me.
Are those songs sung in Florida as well as in the West Indies?
Yes, Dr. Course. They are sung in Key West and Miami and Palm Beach and out in the Everglades, where a great number of Nassaus are working in the bean fields and whatnot. There are a great number of them in Florida. They hold jumping dances every week.
I think it's very interesting that we have influences from the West Indies as well as from the rural South in our Florida Negro folklore.
As Zora Neale Hurston was conducting field work in Florida, Sarah Gertrude Knott founded both the National Folk Festival and National Folk Festival Association in 1934. Among the earliest advisors for these endeavors was Miss Hurston. In 1952, under contract from the Stephen Foster Memorial Commission, Knott organized the first Florida Folk Festival and formed the Florida Folk Festival Association. She also served as director of the first two Florida Folk Festivals in 1953 and 1954. Here is an excerpt from a speech Knott gave during the 1954 Florida Folk Festival.
The old way of life is changing in the United States. It hasn't been so long since St. Augustine and many of the early villages and hamlets in the United States had its town crier, the crier who called the time, the tide, weather, all kinds of events of local and national importance. Today we watch the television and listen to the radio, and many of these old traditions that have gone into the making of our country are past. We are right now on hallowed ground, on the ground that the state of Florida has made hallowed because it is in memory of one of our great songwriters, Stephen Foster. Stephen Foster saw a coming on of a new age. He saw the passing of the age of which he was a part and the things that he held dear. Look at the dioramas, the lovely ones, up at the Stephen Foster Memorial, and you get the feeling that Stephen Foster, a number of years ago, felt that the change was coming and there was nostalgia as he wrote about my old Kentucky home, as he wrote the gentle story of Old Black Joe, as he wrote the romantic story of Come to My Lattice Love. In these songs and in the mood that Stephen Foster had, we see the passing of this period.
Succeeding Sarah Gertrude Knott as director of the Florida Folk Festival from 1954 to 1965 was Cousin Thelma Bolton from Gainesville. In addition to sharing her gifts as a storyteller, organizer, and MC, Cousin Thelma, a title earned from her familial rapport with festival participants, scouted the state for folk artists to recruit for the festival. With the help of Barbara Beecham, Bolton established the Florida Folk Festival as a valuable institution for sharing and celebrating the state's varied traditions. Let's enjoy one of Cousin Thelma's famous stories, followed by an excerpt from a 1978 interview with state folklorist Peggy Bolger.
And I want to tell you that this is the way the story was set down, and this is the way I'm going to tell it. Now, a long time ago, things was different. It weren't nothing on the earth, because there weren't no earth. There weren't nothing nowheres. And every day was Sunday, with the Lord read back, preaching all day long, except on Saturday. Then everybody went to the celestial fish fry. So one day everybody was out to the fish fry, eating fish and bile custard and carrying on. To all at once, the Lord swallowed some bile custard, which didn't suit his taste. This custard, say the Lord, ain't seasoned right. It's too thick. It's got a heap of sugar and eggs and milk and things in it, Lord, say Gable. I know, say the Lord, but it tastes like it needs just a little bit more firmament in it. Us ain't got no more firmament, Lord, say Gable. Us ain't got another drop in the jug. You've been using a mighty heap of firmament, say the Lord. Seems like every time I come to a fish fry, I gotta create some more firmament. I bet I'm gonna make enough this time to last a month of Sundays. I'm sick and tired of passing the miracle every time I come to a fish fry and every time I want some firmament. So the Lord read back and he passed the miracle and he said, let it be some firmament. And when I say, let it be some firmament, let it be a whole heap of firmament. I'm sick and tired of having just a little bitty dab of firmament when I need it. Oh, well, you just ought to see the firmament. It was just sloshing around all over everything, so that the angels and the cherubs couldn't hardly fly. And everybody was standing round in it knee-deep, a-shivering and chattering and a-squirming. "Oh, well," say the mammy angel, "I guess I got to gather up my cherubs and get on home and dry them out. They shivering like they got a buck egg right this minute." "Oh, don't go busting up the fish fry just because the cherubs is wet," say the Lord. "I'll dry them out." So the Lord, he passed another miracle. And he say, "Let it be the sun to dry out these here cherubs." And there was the sun. But it didn't do no good, because quick as they dry out, they'd get wet all over again, because they was so much from them. "This ain't getting us nowhere," say the Lord. "Gabriel, maybe some of us men folks better get out and ditch around and drain off some of this here firmament." "Good idea," say Gable, "only it won't work because there ain't no place to drain it off to." "Well," say the Lord, "I guess I gotta pass another miracle and make a place to drain it off to. It seems like every time I start passing miracles, it's always something else." So he read back and he passed another miracle. And he say, "Let it be the earth to hold all this here firmament." And there was the earth. Well, the firmament runned onto the earth. And it runned into the rivers and the creeks and the ditches, cause firmament wasn't nothing but a fancy name for water. And there was the earth with a heap of dry land left over.
In 1954, the president of the National Federation of Music Clubs, her name doesn't come to me right this minute, but no matter, she said to Mrs. Saunders that when she visited the memorial, that she thought the banks of the Suwannee River would be the perfect place to have a Florida folk festival. Well, you know Mrs. Saunders, she took that right up and got up a committee, called on Dr. Alton Morris, and he was certainly all for it. Well, I was on that committee, the planning, and we decided that we should get Sarah Gertrude Knott, the director of the National Folk Festival, to come down and help us plan it and set it up. And in the meantime, in Gainesville during this time, well, let's see, back in the late 20s, I was helped establish Gainesville Little Theater, which is a very flourishing going thing today. And was involved in, I played in plays, I acted and I directed, not only with Gainesville Little Theater and with my creative dramatics, but with the Florida Players before it was co-ed. You see, they had to call on townswomen to fill the roles, the female roles in the plays. And so that was fun. So I was very close to them out there. And, well, anyway, then the third year of the folk festival, Sarah had a commitment which wouldn't allow her to come the first weekend in May to direct the festival for that time. Well, she came, she usually came in February to do her planning and get the program up. And Dr. Morris came to me, and I never shall forget it. He called me up and said he'd like to see me. And he came, and I couldn't imagine what he wanted. And he stood up in the middle of the floor, and he made a pretty little speech, and he said that Miss Knott was not able to come. But the committee felt that if we would have a Florida Folk Festival, it should be directed by a Florida person and somebody who had the feeling for it and the time to do it. And they all felt that I was that person. Well, I was, you know, flabbergasted and started to open my mouth and say, good gracious, I can't do that. But fortunately, he didn't allow me to say a word. He said, now wait, don't say a word. I want you to sleep on it. And remember to think positively, not negatively. Well, that's such good advice. And I took it. And I've certainly never regretted it. And it certainly opened doors to me. Naturally, when I took over as director of the Florida Folk Festival, I had the talent scout and I did exactly what you're doing now. My goodness, I was from one end of the state to the other.
Rooting out talent. Right.
Yes. And it was a wonderful thing. And of course, as is the case now, one would tell us about another. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful thing that folklore is all around us, but sometimes we don't recognize it. Mm-hmm. And this has been my mission in going into the schools. As you know, I have a lecture recital that I have done through the years that I call Florida Lore in Song and Story. And when I go in the schools, I always beg the children to go and sit at the feet of the oldest member of the family, whoever that might be. And if they don't have living grandparents or aunts and uncles, most of them do, go to a neighbor and get stories from the neighbors. I feel like an evangelist. My mission in life is to get the children to appreciate those old people. Sometimes they're ashamed of their old folks, you know. Mm-hmm. And to see them with a new eye, because they have so much to give.
Dr. Peggy Bolger was Florida's first state folklorist, founding and administering the Florida Folklife Program from 1976 to 1989. She created a large body of fieldwork which laid the foundations for the Florida Folklife Collection and instituted valuable outreach programs such as apprenticeships, educational videos and publications, workshops, and exhibits. Dr. Bolger went on to serve as the Senior Program Officer for the Southern Arts Federation and later as Director of the Library of Congress American Folklife Center. In this 1982 interview, she discusses the origins of the Florida Folklife Program and what folklore means to her.
Well, the Florida Folklife Program was established in 1979 to document and also to serve as a cultural advocacy organization for the folk artists of the state. There is no such animal in many states. However, it's become much more prevalent in the past couple of years for states to support folk culture the same way that they would support archaeology or historic preservation. I know when I started working here in Florida as the folk arts coordinator for the state, which was back in 1976, we didn't have a program at that time. We just had one person here. There were only six states that had instituted a program such as this or had anyone in the state working to find the cultural resources that we're talking about. How you can tell that what you are doing or what you've just done is a bit of your own folklore is that every once in a while, you'll stop and say, now, why did I do that? And you realize you have no idea in the world why you just did that. But it's just done. When I would do something and my mother would find out about it, and I thought I'd kept a real good secret, I'd ask her, well, how did you know? And she said, oh, a little bird told me. And I never thought much about it until I grew up and started studying folklore. Then one day I heard myself saying it, and I thought, now that is really, why do I say that? A little bird told me. That didn't make much sense at all to me. Obviously, I was repeating what my mother had said, and she was probably repeating what her mother had said, who was repeating it ad infinitum. And since I was fortunate enough to have access to a folklore archive, I started looking up that particular saying and perhaps finding out what the origin of that was, and come to find out it has a very fascinating history. In almost every culture of the world, birds are truth-sayers. In the Odyssey, if you wanted to tell the future, you cut up a bird and you find out what the entrails tell you. In the Arabian Nights, it's the parrot who informs on the wife of the Sultan. And you can find in all the early oral literature of every country, they have birds playing this function. Our bluegrass number, Pretty Polly, which is actually derived from an old English ballad originally, where Pretty Polly never was the girl who gets killed. In the English ballad, Pretty Polly is a parrot who saves a girl from being killed by squawking at the right moment, so she turns around and finds her assailant. And when I started digging into this, I thought, well, maybe that's where we get the expression stool pigeon. And the more you start digging into expressions that you use, just little things that you do that are so much a part of your vocabulary or your belief system, you don't even think about it. Until you come in contact with somebody who's not of your, who doesn't share that tradition and points it out to you a lot of times, you never know that it's unique. We really do try to point out the everyday treasure of people's lives.
With the establishment of the Florida Folklife Program came significant contributions for many other women. Working alongside Peggy Bolger was Brenda McCollum, who was instrumental in documenting and establishing contacts in Florida's communities. She also played an important role in developing the Florida Folklife Program archive, and today the American Folklore Society awards a prize in her honor to institutions and individuals working with folklife collections. Tina Bukovalis served as the state folklorist from 1996 to 2009, though her work with the Florida Folklife Program dates back to 1986 with the Miami-Dade Folklife Survey. She currently serves as Curator of Arts and Historical Resources for the City of Tarpon Springs, and recently edited the Florida Folklife Reader. The list of women who have been integral to the research, documentation, and teaching of Florida's folk traditions continues with Mary Belland, Nancy News, Ricky Saltzman, Jan Rosenberg, Debbie Fant, Andrea Graham, Lori Sommers, Mary Ann McDonald, Teresa Hollingsworth, Betsy Peterson, and Doris Dian, interviewed here.
The way our work is structured in this program, a lot less of your time is really interpretive than you'd like. A lot more of it, the sheer physical effort and time involved in gathering information is far outweighs the amount of time you ever have to sift through it. And that's one of the things that all of us talk about, you know, from time to time, is that our most long-term contribution, you know, to the state or to our own organization will have been in the collecting of information so that other people who, in the future, who have more time can sift through certain aspects of it and really, you know, come up with some good analyses of things or approaches to the material. Culture is always evolving and always changing, and the most interesting thing is not necessarily what it used to be, but why it used to be the way it was, why it is the way it is now, and what it might be becoming, 2 seconds from now, tomorrow, whenever. It's very hard to get too upset about something disappearing or songs dying out or whatever, because the reasons why people do certain things in their culture, people do things because they have meaning for them, and when they no longer have a meaning, there's no reason to do them. So the only thing that I ever feel an urgency about, perhaps, is to understand as much as possible about what's going on so that you can understand the future.
While it is impossible to comprehensively recognize the individual efforts of everyone mentioned in a single podcast, we hope to have invoked a greater appreciation for the significant contributions women have made in documenting and preserving a history of and for the people of Florida. Thanks for listening.